League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome to the Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Kupfer.
That's me.
Oh my god, sorry, I did that with such little breath in me. This week, we're talking about feeding felines and caring for canines. But first, we have a wee review.
Ooh.
This one has 5 stars. The title is The Podcast, and it says, "Wow, this amazing, educational, and funny podcast has the vibe of just chilling with your favorite science homies broskies. Absolutely listen to it if you haven't already. It has quickly become not just mine, but also some of my classmates' absolutely favorite podcast."
Wow, we should come to a show in your classroom.
Absolutely. And the question for this week is very straightforward. If you're not watching on YouTube, get to YouTube right now, get down to the comments and answer this question. The question is, do you have any pets?
I have a pet cat and a wife.
Sorry.
Stop being mean about your wife where she can't hear you.
That's not mean.
Okay, fantastic. Let's just move on. So cats and dogs are a pretty
big... And wives. Yeah.
Are a pretty big industry when it comes to their food.
I regret saying what I just said.
Exactly. Okay, so there's a pretty big industry behind cat food and dog food, you know, because you need to feed your pets, because otherwise you'll go to jail or they'll get very sick and die and nothing will happen, but you'll feel sad. Anyway, you want to feed your pets is the main thing that I'm trying to get across here. It's $134 billion, apparently, each year.
Wow.
That is, yeah, exactly, that is eaten by cats and dogs, not in money, by the way.
Yes.
In food.
Food can be exchanged for goods and... No, money can be exchanged for goods and services, including cat and dog food.
That's true. And food can be exchanged for goods and services too, if you know how to barter. Anyway, that's not quite what we're talking...
Or if you're the company that sells the food.
That's true. Yeah, sure. That's not quite what we're talking about today, though. Look, what is something that you and I share in our dietary habits?
We both eat vegan food exclusively.
That is so very true. And what do you know about cats and dogs?
They are also vegan animals. Herbivores.
Right. So...
Yeah.
No.
I've been feeding my cat exclusively spinach. Ever since I watched Popeye.
So, what we're talking about today is vegan diets for pets.
Yes.
And whether or not that's a good idea.
Okay. Well, I'm going to find... I have a friend with a vegan dog. So I'll find this slightly... We'll see how it goes.
So before we actually get into discussing whether it's healthy to feed cats and dogs vegan diets, we need to talk about carnivores, omnivores, and herbivores. You mentioned herbivores, Luke. Do you know anything about herbivores?
Herbivores exclusively eat plant matter. Carnivores exclusively eat meat matter. And omnivores eat a bit of both, mixing it up.
Yeah, kind of.
Do you mean?
I mean that essentially the categories that we have are not real.
Oh,
it's
no.
That again.
Again.
We should get like a little bell. I say bell or like a button, you know, that has like a categories aren't real alarm for whenever we say that categories aren't real, because they're not. So let's pretend they are real for a second and just run through the basics. The stuff that you probably already know, the stuff that you probably learned in school. So autotrophs are producers, right? They make their own food. Autotrophs would be things like most plants, right? They make their food from the sun. The sun shoots energy down to Earth, and plants eat up that energy and make it into food that they can eat later. That makes
sense?
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
That's how it works. That is how it works, trust me. So they do that, and that's how they get their energy, right? They get it from the sun. Now, if you are, say, another creature that can't get its energy from the sun, what are you going to do?
You're
going to
eat stuff that already exists.
Exactly. So we, instead of making our own energy from the sun, we go ahead and steal the energy, essentially, from things that have made it from the sun.
I mean, plants just stole it from the sun, though.
Well, the sun is very kindly sharing it.
That's true.
Yeah.
Whereas the food mostly runs away.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I don't know if mostly, actually, because most of the food is plants, right?
So, well, yeah, but the plants, they do like their little tiny screams when you try to eat them, even though we can't hear them or smell them. They do have little screams sometimes.
Little chemical screams, yes. you should say.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so they release chemicals, letting other plants in the area know that there's danger about. And a lot of, well, for some plants, that means shunting as much of the sort of energy that they can, the nutrients, down to the roots, so they're less likely to be sort of eaten, essentially. But yeah, so autotrophs are producers, things like plants and whatnot. Herbivores are animals that eat pretty much exclusively plant matter, mm-hmm. right? So I say pretty much exclusively. We'll get into why that is in a second. But yeah, herbivores are things like, you know, deer or cows, things that don't eat other animals.
And instead, saiguys.
Or saiguys. Although saiguys are a difficult one because we're not wholly plant-based.
No, we eat mushrooms too.
So many mushrooms.
Yeah.
So many mushrooms.
But that would still be a herbivore though, no?
I think it would be, yeah. Fungi are weird. They're, I think, more similar to animals, technically. But we think of them as being more like plants. I mean, colloquially speaking, we think of them as being more like plants because they look more like plants, which is, they don't. They look very, very weird.
What's
but they
weird
don't
about,
really move.
What's weird about mushrooms is that mushrooms is almost like eating, because they're kind of like this weird big organism with like a mycelial mat underneath. It's kind of like eating hair. It's like if we went up to a cow and we ate its hair.
Except I think
a monkey and ate its hair.
The fruiting bodies of mushrooms that we eat are kind of like the sex organs, as far as I'm aware.
Nah, it's like eating dick.
It's like eating dick. Yeah, you're eating fungus dick, I'm afraid.
Well, I don't eat that many mushrooms, but when I do, I hold that thought in mind at the forefront. Hmm. God, I love eating plant dick.
I love eating a fungi's dick.
Yeah. Oh no! I just realized what you said. Naughty, naughty.
Let's get back to it. Herbivores are organisms that mostly feed on plants. They can be any size, basically. You've got tiny little ones like tiny insects and going right up to elephants and giraffes and, you know, big animals like that. Carnivores eat mostly meat, you know, or I say meat, that's not strictly true. Carnivores mostly eat other animals, so
stuff.
Animal products. Yeah, so that could be eggs, that could be bones, that could be any part of another animal. I say another animal.
Or the produce of another animal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I say another animal, that would imply that all carnivores are animals, which isn't strictly true. There are carnivorous plants, there are carnivorous fungi, but generally when we talk about carnivores, we're talking about animals, right?
I used to raise carnivorous plants as a child, but they weren't very good at it. They were like really bad at being carnivorous plants, so I had to like run around my room with a ruler, like smacking flies. And then getting the dead fly and then feeding it to the plant.
I love that you say, I used to raise them.
Yeah.
As though it was like a sustained career choice for you as a child.
My children. My stinky children, which I had to catch flies with.
Do they smell? Oh, I suppose they would smell to attract the flies.
They probably smelt because I didn't feed them enough flies and they were dying.
Did you do a thing where you were poking them to get them to bite you?
Yeah, all the time.
That's probably why they were dying. They don't have enough energy to do that all the time without getting a fly in there. Jesus.
Yeah, all the time, though. It was so funny and tickly.
That is the equivalent of, like,
yeah,
giving
when
you
I say I raised them, it's more that I had them and
you
I tortured
them.
Yeah.
This is a very different picture than you first presented.
It's the equivalent of what?
It's the equivalent of... there's not really a valid equivalent of it with cats and dogs, but I suppose it's like, aha, look, here I'm feeding you food, my dog, and then just pulling it right out of its mouth.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah, it's like if you get a dreamy for your cat just to get it to stand up, but then you don't actually give it the dreamy.
Yeah.
But I always give it the dreamy.
Yeah, you don't give your plants the dreamy, do you?
No, I don't think they'd want the dreamy. We could try, though. We could raise some Venus flytraps and feed them exclusively dreamies. That'd be a fun experiment.
It would be a fantastic experiment. I doubt they would survive, but it would be a fantastic one. So, yeah, carnivores, again, mostly eat the flesh of other animals or just other animals, let's say. They just eat animals. That's what carnivores do. mostly eat animals, right? You can break carnivores down into subgroups, obligate carnivores and facultative carnivores. Do you know what the difference between those two might be?
Okay. So obligate carnivores are, they have to be carnivores. They are obliged to be carnivores.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the other one?
Facultative.
Facultative carnivores. Those are, they're carnivores by choice. That's most... Most people are actually facultative carnivores. What? They just opt into carnivorism.
So what you're
what Jordan Peterson was when he went on his all-meat diet.
No, so, Jesus Christ. You're halfway there. Obligate carnivores, yeah, they have to eat. They have to rely pretty much entirely on animal matter to survive, whereas facultative carnivores can also eat non-animal matter.
But they only do that when there's a famine.
No.
Okay.
No. So I this is not so much about the choice of the individual animal so much as it is a species-wide trend.
Yeah.
Right? So it wouldn't be all that correct to call an individual organism a facultative carnivore unless you're speaking about the species as a whole, right? So it's not about the choices that any individual organism makes. It's just about their biology and their behavioral sort of, the sort of behavioral trends across the entire species.
So is it like they have the capacity to digest non-meat matter, but most of the time they will eat meat?
Not necessarily. I mean, it is just what I'm saying, is that they can survive. They can survive sort of only on meat, but they're also able to digest plant material. Like, they're able to get enough nutrition from plant material that they can have a mix of both. So, I mean, the line between a facultative carnivore and an omnivore is, it doesn't really exist. It's kind of like a sliding scale.
Mm.
Omnivores, we tend to refer to something as an omnivore more if it has quite a balanced diet between those two things. Whereas a facultative carnivore is probably something more like a dog.
Right.
Wherein dogs are technically omnivores, but we would tend to call them carnivores because they eat more meat, right?
Yep.
Say, than we normally would.
Other
you know?
Than if you get them really crap dog food.
Yeah.
In which case, it's mostly like sawdust
and
grains. And
corns. And, yeah, like all of the... It's probably corn.
But
because
they think they're eating mostly meat. But that's because they're stupid.
Sure, yeah. They're stupid. I mean, that's the one thing you could say about dogs. They are definitely not as smart as people.
Yeah.
But most people.
Yeah.
So omnivores are animals that eat both plant and animal derived foods. If we're going to run through what the Latin means, herbivore means plant eater, carnivore means meat eater, omnivore means everything or all eater. It will eat, basically, it doesn't need to just eat meat or plants, right?
And which so it's like category humans, is a flying purple people eater?
That would be a carnivore.
It would, you're
yeah,
right.
It would be. Yeah,
well, no, they can be a people eater, but they can also be like a plant eater.
Yeah, but if we're talking about an ant eater, right?
Yes.
They primarily, if it's something has X eater in the name,
yes,
it probably primarily eats that thing, right?
Yeah, you're so right.
You know?
Yeah.
So omnivores would include sort of pigs, bears, humans, even chickens. You know, carnivores would be things like cats. Facultative carnivores are dogs. So we're talking about obligate carnivores. We've got cats in there, and pretty much any member of the cat family. So lions, cheetahs, all of that lot. Facultative carnivores would be dogs is a decent example. Herbivores, you know, deer, elephants, we've kind of run through those. But as I said, it is important to note that the lines can be blurry. So deer, for example, might eat other animals if the opportunity arises. And pandas eat bamboo shoots and leaves despite having a more sort of carnivorous / omnivorous biology.
Shocking.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's actually ridiculous. I mean, why don't we go into a little bit about how pandas became herbivorous?
Please.
So you know about pandas, right? They look like carnivores, kind of look like carnivores on the outside, but their sort of behavior is that of herbivores. They just eat bamboo.
Yeah, well, they're too lazy. Catch anything.
Well, kind of. That does kind of come into it. Yeah. So, I mean, when I say they kind of look like carnivores, I mean that on the inside and out. If you look at their teeth, if you look at their digestive system, you would not expect them to be eating plants.
Not just their fur.
Not just their...
I was like, when you said that, you look at a panda, I'm like, just thinking about a panda.
I mean, more the claws.
They look like a carnivore, do
and
they?
The teeth.
Yes. And yes. Yes.
They're bears, you know? Yeah. They look like they wouldn't just eat plants.
Right.
Which is what they do. And that was really weird. We didn't really understand that. So if we go back about 2.4 2 million years ago, pandas started to become more herbivores than they were sort of, I guess, omnivores. And essentially, the gene for, you know, the umami taste, like the, yes, sort of the taste that you get in meat.
Yes.
The gene for that taste receptor apparently became inactive, and their jaw and teeth then changed slightly so that they became better at crushing bamboo. And they got that pseudo thumb on their wrist bone, which helps them hang on to the bamboo. So all of those changes started to occur, and we're not exactly sure why that happened. It could have something to do with the taste receptor disappearing, and so they've got less of a taste for meat, like literally less of a taste for it. But also, they don't need to fight with anything for bamboo, because bamboo doesn't run away.
No one else wants to eat it.
Literally,
it sucks.
Bamboo sucks.
They have to eat so much bamboo,
yeah,
to stay pandas.
Exactly, yeah. But they're eating specific parts of bamboo, and this is what they sort of looked into in a specific study. They put GPS trackers on two giant pandas and just saw what they did throughout the year. I love
that
scientists.
That sounds like a YouTube thumb, like a YouTube title.
Yeah.
I put a GPS tracker on two giant pandas and saw what it did throughout the year.
Luke, biologists that studied animals are brilliant.
They're just clickbaiting.
I mean, I swear to God, a lot of the time they're just putting tags on animals and seeing what they do. Like, it is brilliant. Not to diminish the work of,
yeah,
you know, biologists,
yeah,
everywhere, but it is, a lot of it is just sticking a tag on an animal or setting a video camera and seeing what happens. I love that about
did
it.
You ever see that TV show where we stuck like little GoPros on cats and just saw what they got up to all day, and like just saw them like greet other cats, and like, it's like a parkour video. It's like a first-person parkour video, because cats are so,
yeah,
good,
yeah,
at like jumping and climbing stuff. And then, yeah, you see some of them like just go like bloop to other cats and say hi. And then some get into fights, and then just like some sit on roofs all day. Oh, man, it was such a good show.
I think I would genuinely watch that all day. I could watch nature documentaries like all the time.
Yeah.
They're fantastic. But back to this. These pandas were moving around. So they were kind of following the protein, essentially. Specific parts of plants can have higher concentrations of protein than other parts. So specifically, the sort of shoots are higher in protein for bamboo than other parts of it. So they were literally just following the most protein-rich parts of the bamboo. So once they'd eaten, you know, all of the shoots in one area, they'd move off to a sort of another area where the shoots were sort of starting to come through. And so, you know, As the bamboo grows, a lot of that protein will kind of be replaced with fiber in terms of the sort of density of it within the plant itself. And when that happens, they move on. But the researchers weren't quite satisfied with that. They wanted to check out to see whether they were actually eating the protein. So they were going, they were eating the protein, whether they were actually sort of digesting it and sort of taking it in. And they were getting about 50% of their calories from protein, and they were like looking at the panda's manure, and most of the protein was gone. Like almost all of the protein was being used and absorbed. So essentially, pandas still have that like really high sort of high amount of energy coming from protein that you would expect to see in a carnivore. They're just getting it from bamboo by eating very specific parts of the bamboo and just following that around.
So if you're a vegan and somebody asks you, so where do you get your protein? You can say, well, pandas eat protein from bamboo and very little of it comes out in their poo. Gotcha.
I mean, again,
I'll tell my dad that next
no, don't
time
tell
I see
you,
him.
Don't tell your dad that. I mean, what you can kind of take from this is that the difference between herbivore and carnivore isn't quite as simple as look at the teeth and look at the digestive system,
yeah,
because pandas have evolved, like, you know, we say that they are carnivores that just eat plants for some reason, right? That's what people say. I think I might have said that before. There are some evolutionary changes that have made them more suited to eating bamboo, but yeah, they still are like more or less carnivores outside of those few very small changes, which is absolutely wild. So the kind of takeaway from that is that the line between herbivore, carnivore, omnivore isn't as simple as you would think, because it's nature, and nature is not as simple as we would think.
Corey, you're making me leave the safe world I lived in, where categories exist and I can put everything into boxes. Next you're going to tell me that introverts and extroverts don't exist.
Oh, Luke. Oh, boy. Have I got some news for you?
How I possibly categorize all of my friends?
Oh, just wait till you find out that good people and bad people don't exist.
You what?
Yeah, buddy.
Oh, no.
You are what you do.
Oh, dear.
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
Hark, the ad bell, he does sing.
He sings for Patreon, I think. If you head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys, you can get a whole host of cool things. What can they get, Luke?
Oh, blimmin' heck. They can get so many things. There's bonus episodes. You can request topics for episodes. There's an entire other show called After Dark where we discuss sort of philosophical things and just general discussion, the kind of stuff that you imagine we talk about after we've finished recording. Well, that is when we do it, so that is what we do. And lots of other stuff. What else is there?
You get your name at the end of every single SciGuys episode. You can also vote on topics. You get to choose what we do. And at the end of the episode that's voted on by our patrons, if it's your first month being a patron, you get thanked by name. By us, the SciGuys. Isn't that fun?
That is really fun. I'll use my vocal cords to say your name with a 50% probability because Corey says half of them.
That's very true. So head to our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys. So now that we know that herbivores, carnivores, and omnivores aren't actually all that real, why don't we talk about the general features of all of those groups?
Okay, so now that we've debunked them entirely, let's learn about them.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, it is useful to understand the general sort of differences, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for example, you probably know this. What are the sort of differences in teeth, for example?
So, spiky teeth, mm-hmm. like these canines that we mm-hmm. have as people, in order to rip meat off the bone.
Mm-hmm.
And also I would imagine like something to do with the back teeth is different because you don't have to sort of grind down. If you're eating meat, you don't have to sort of grind down the like kind of hard matter inside of a plant stem.
Yeah, spot on. So, I mean, obviously this is only applying really to vertebrates because that's generally what we're talking about when we're talking about herbivores and carnivores and whatnot, you know, as sort of layman, let's say. But yeah, you're spot on. Sharp, sort of pointed teeth, the molars towards the back, or sort of the teeth towards the back, yeah. They're more designed for sort of shearing meat off the bone and cracking bones than they are for grinding down plant matter. Mm-hmm. And if you've not sort of looked into this or learned about this in school before, you might be thinking, well, aren't teeth just teeth? Don't you just need, can you not just do anything? Well, not really. I mean, humans, the fact that we are human has probably given us kind of a skewed view on teeth because we have quite omnivorous teeth.
We have both.
We've kind of got the best of both worlds, exactly. So we've got these incisors at the front, so that your sort of front four teeth, they're incisors. Their job is to snip stuff, essentially, like cut off the things you're eating. So if you're eating plant matter, you can bite through, say, an apple or a leaf or, you know, a stem or something like that with your front teeth.
Munch.
Cut right through it. Your canines are more for sort of piercing and gripping meat and kind of, I guess, tearing through in that sort of way. If you look at a carnivore, basically all of their teeth are pointed, you know, and that could be for like sort of like grabbing into their prey and like actually holding onto it and killing it, down to cracking the bones and, you know, like shearing through meat. And then you've got sort of you've go past your canines to your molars. Those are the ones towards the back that are for grinding. So we've got molars that are pretty decent for grinding down food. Obviously, probably not as good as other animals that eat way more plant matter than mm-hmm. us and much tougher plant matter than us. So, for example, we can't eat grass, right? That's just not good for us.
Is that because of our teeth or because of our digestive system?
Both.
Okay.
There is silica in grass. I think it's silica. But there are chemicals in grass that are quite hard and will actually wreck your teeth if you eat grass for a long, like, you know, over a long period of time. It looks very soft, but it is not. Do not eat grass. Do not eat grass. Your stomach is also not set up to sort of digest grass. So we could go through that now. The differences in GI tracts. What do you think the difference is there?
I have a distant memory of a piece of information that animals that are carnivorous / I guess omnivorous have shorter digestive tracts because you don't want rotting flesh sitting around in your digestive tract.
Well, yeah, I mean,
and also you have multiple stomachs probably if you're doing like, well, cows have multiple stomachs, I imagine, for digesting grass.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe plant matter takes longer to digest?
Yeah, spot on. So herbivores tend to have longer GI tracts, gastrointestinal tracts, you know, your stomach, your intestines, all of that stuff, where food goes through to get nutrients from it, right?
Yeah.
Now, they tend to have longer GI tracts, because plant matter has got more complex sort of structures in it, right? So if you go down to the cellular level, plants have cell walls, these sort of rigid structures around the cells that sort of keep their shape. And animal cells don't have that. They're more squishy, essentially. They're more squishy.
Yeah.
And they're easier to sort of destroy, essentially. And you can see that. I mean, think about it this way, right? Which would you rather chew through? A lovely piece of bacon or a bit of tree bark?
Casting aside my veganism, definitely a lovely piece of bacon.
Right, exactly.
Well, actually, no. Still, actually, even though veganism, I don't really want to eat tree bark.
No.
So if you had to force me, if you were going to force me, I'd probably choose bacon. Wow, yeah. Bad vegan. No longer a vegan. Categories aren't real.
Hypothetically, no longer a vegan. Look at that. But no, I mean, the point here is that, yes, on average, plant matter is just much tougher than animal matter. Obviously, there are some differences there. Like, teeth are very hard. That's why you don't see animals eating teeth all that often.
Yeah.
Bones, you know, unless they're little bones, are usually quite strong. Mm. But that's why you would usually crack those open, eat the marrow inside. Or if it's a smaller animal, just eat it all.
Do they have to, let plant matter ferment in their stomachs? Is that one of the processes? Like, because when you let sort of fruits ferment, they become alcohol, which is sort of an easier thing to break down. It's quite a bioavailable form of energy, which we don't think of alcohol as being energy, but it is energy, and you can burn it and it releases quite a lot of energy. We think of it as an intoxicant, but actually it is a form of energy. We can use it for energy.
Yeah, I mean, it is both, isn't it? Yeah. That's why you've got something like, you know, that's why you've got beer bellies, really, is that alcohol, it is literally energy.
But yeah, do they ferment? Do they ferment plant matter in their stomachs?
I wouldn't necessarily say ferment so much as they do. Like, so there are ruminants that have got multi-chambered sort of stomachs. So that would be cows, sheep, deer, giraffes, camels, all of that lot. They have multi-chambered stomachs, and the plant matter will go through, be digested by one stomach, by another. They kind of throw it back up. They chew it again. That's cud, you know, chewing the cud.
Yeah.
That's what that is. They do have, I guess, specialized bacteria that help them break it down. But yeah, I mean, essentially the way that their stomachs work is just by keeping it in there for a lot longer, having more specialized bacteria and chewing it twice. You can break down all that plant matter. Whether it's actually specifically fermentation, I don't know off the top of my head. I would hazard a guess and say it likely isn't exactly fermentation the way that you're probably thinking about it, but I could be totally wrong. Like, I don't know anything specific about the, I guess, bacterial makeup and the biochemistry of ruminant stomachs, I'm afraid.
Well, how dare you? What a letdown.
I'm so sorry.
You don't have information about ruminant stomachs just to hand?
I really don't. But yeah, I mean, so the idea that you bring up earlier of, you know, carnivores' GI tracts are shorter because you don't want rotting meat in your stomach. I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily the reason so much as it is just easier to digest meat in general, right? I mean, if you think about it this way, right? Plants are quite different to animals. Mm. You know, we're all somewhat similar. We're all organisms. We're all living on the same planet, blah, 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 blah. But plants are quite different to animals. Animals are generally going to be, I say generally, animals are going to be more similar to each other, biologically speaking, than they are to plants.
Mm, right? Yes.
Do you agree with that?
I would say that's a fairly good guess. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Luke. So it is going to be easier to get the nutrients and the energy that you need from something that is more like your body.
Sure.
Than it is from something that is less like your body. I mean, and it doesn't just come down to the sort of the structure of plants that is sort of tougher and harder to digest. It's also just...
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The way that certain chemicals that you need are, I guess, stored or used in plants, it will be slightly different to the way that it is in animals. Because essentially that you could look at this, is that if you're eating other animals, they've already done a lot of the hard work for you.
I was going to say, it's like outsourcing.
Yeah.
It's really weird. It's like you've got, if only this thing didn't like, feel pain and like, you know.
Eat oysters then.
Have like problems with like the environment and stuff like that. It's ultimately just outsourcing. You've just got an employee called like Brenda, whatever you call cows. I don't know, traditional cow names.
Daisy,
sorry, yeah. Brenda's, I don't know, feels like...
It fits, though.
It does. I don't know why, but it does. Anyway, so you got Daisy the cow. She's your employee, and she goes and eats grass for you and turns it into tasty, tasty meat. Annoyingly, she also feels pain and sorrow when you take her children away from her.
That Daisy.
Come on, Daisy, get over it. God. And also she farts all the time, and that's a problem as well. I would love to know, though.
I need to say this before someone gets in the comments and says, actually, it's not so much the, I don't think it's so much the farting from cows as the belching.
Oh, my apologies. Yeah. Well, there's a world of difference there.
I'm sorry.
I know you're anticipating the
comments. I don't want to be that guy, but I have to.
But, I mean, if that's the hill you're dying on, then that's an interesting take. But what if I'm really... Yeah, I'd love to know, like... I'm not here to just promote veganism all the time, obviously. Although, you know, I do like veganism. If you can do it, it's quite a good thing, at least partially. But I'd love to know, like, what... Because, I mean, the number we're taught in biology in high school, which, you know, as we talk about a lot on this podcast, high school biology is not a good representation of what the world's actually like, is like a 10-to-1 ratio. It takes 10 times more calories every time there's a level in the food chain, right? So it, when it goes from plant to cow, you lose 90% of the calories. When it goes from cow to you lose 90% of the calories. I don't know if that number is absolutely correct, but I'd love to know if I, as a vegan, take on an average of 2,000 to 2,500 calories a day, what is the equivalent number of calories that somebody on an omnivorous diet essentially eats because of the fact that the thing that they're eating had to have calories? You know what I mean? So like if my budget for the day is ultimately 2,500 calories, right? Mm. Or 2,000 calories, whatever. How many equivalent calories did somebody who got their food from a meat source, or at least partially from a meat source, essentially eat because of how many calories came from the cow and how many calories were required to get those calories that they ate from the cow or the pig or the chicken? You know what I mean? So it might be something like 20,000 calories were actually required to make your 2,000 calories for the day. And that would, like, we get all these numbers about, like, oh, this many greenhouse emissions every year, or is this much more efficient? But if it was actually, like, when you eat 2,000 calories, you're actually eating the produce from 20,000 calories, that would really, I think, better put it into perspective for how wasteful that diet can be.
We tried doing that. We tried doing it with water. You know, the water consumption.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't
make sense, because it's like, well, the water ultimately stays on Earth. It doesn't go anywhere. Obviously, yeah, I know that's stupid.
I know. Okay, but we need to say this for anyone listening that doesn't know. The reason that it's important how much water something uses is because using water doesn't mean that you can just then use that same water again. It's got to go through filtration systems and cleaning. Basically, the water that you use is going to come out as dirty, let's say sewage water, right? Like dirty water. You then need to clean that water. You need to purify it. You need to make sure it's safe for human consumption, blah, 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 blah. That all costs energy and time. And so also, using a lot of water is not necessarily the best thing.
It has this annoying habit of sometimes you use the water and then it goes into the sky and then the wind blows and it goes away. Isn't that annoying? It's like, oh, I had that water a minute ago. It was dirty, but it's gone over there now. If you're in an area that doesn't have loads of water.
That's very true. Actually, the water does just run away.
Floats away. come back! I should have fed it to plants.
But yeah, no, I kind of want to just briefly touch on this, because it is something that winds me up a lot, right? You know, you'll see people saying, oh, vegan diets, look at how much energy they need to put into making all of this plants for people to... Yeah, you need to do that too for animals. What do you think the animals are eating?
Like, a lot of the time they're eating soy.
Oh, but actually, I only eat grass-fed. Do you think that every person on the planet could... Do you think that we could sustainably have, you know, locally produced grass-fed beef. Can we have that for every single person on the planet at the rate at which we are currently eating meat in, you know, the sort of developed Western world? No.
And even the argument of like, well, your vegetables, your avocados come from the other side of the world. There's a really great Kurzgesagt video on this, which shows the efficiency of different diets, including factoring in if you get a massive amount of your plant source from other countries that sits on a boat for ages. Boats are actually incredibly efficient ways of transporting food around the world. Like, like planes are bad, and no one's arguing that planes are good. So there are certain types of vegan food which are not good. I think some types of apples come from all over the different parts of the world, and they're flown over on planes. I don't know whether it's because of the shelf lives of apples. Almonds have their problems with water consumption out in California. Obviously, there's bad examples. There's examples where vegan food is not good.
However,
yes.
A fun fact, Luke. Do you know what carnivores? Carnivores. Do you know what people that eat meat also eat?
Oh, they maybe eat some vegetables too.
No way. They do. Yeah. They bloody well do. So shut up. Like, you look at how bad plants are for the environment. Okay. Are you telling me that you only eat meat? Or are you telling me that meat is better for the environment than plants? Because one, you don't only eat meat, and two, you need to feed plants to your meat to get meat. So you're doing it
You need to eat like 10 times more plants to your meat to get meat. Yeah. Anyway, we're talking about this while, like, 2 minutes from now, I'm sure we're going to be trashing veganism in terms of giving it to cats, especially. So that's why this is a precursor to that, because, you know, actually veganism isn't applicable in all situations. Of course it's not.
No, I wouldn't say that it is. I really wouldn't say that it is. Although, I feel like you might not be on the right track here. We'll get to it.
Shock.
Let's talk a little bit about whether dogs and cats are carnivores or omnivores. What do you think?
Well, my cat eats grass sometimes, so that would make her an omnivore.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because I did read about this.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have documented cases of cats eating grass and other sort of roughage and whatnot, but it doesn't necessarily provide any nutritional value. It could just be them trying to get excess fiber or something along those lines. But when cats do that, it doesn't seem to be because they need nutrition from the grass.
No, I didn't actually think that.
No, Although
I did buy a packet of seeds called like cat grass. And it was like a seed that you could plant in your house that's specifically for cats, for like, it's like a little shoot, sort of like a grass type thing that cats actually particularly like. And also might be particularly apt for the thing that they are supposedly eating the grass for. So that's fun. I haven't planted it yet, but I'll get around to it.
I'm sure you will. Let us know when you do. But yeah, no, I mean, look, cats and dogs, both carnivores, right? Obviously. Dogs, facultative carnivores, as we've mentioned. Cats, obligate carnivores. Dogs have actually had some, I mean, they've had some sort of changes, apparently, throughout their, domestication that have made them more suited to living with humans and essentially just eating the scraps that we give them.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, right? I mean, despite the fact that I've not lived with dogs for almost a decade now, I still need to get used to the fact that if I drop something on the floor, I personally need to clean that up. I'm not going to lie. If I ever spilled something on the floor and I was cooking, that is dog food. That they clean.
Yeah. My parents have a dog, and that you literally just go, Isla, come and eat this thing off the floor. It's great. Just clean it up.
My dogs did not even need to be called through. Like, he was sat there watching the entire time. He knew. He was waiting. But yeah, no, dogs can eat a ton. I mean, you could feed dogs cheese. I was drinking like a responsible adult. I was at McDonald's, and outside there was a dog. I think it was maybe a homeless man's dog, but it was a dog, right? He was just sitting there. And I was like, I've got a spare burger. I'll give the dog the burger. And someone was like, oh, whoa, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. What's going on? He's like, you can't feed a dog a burger. Are you stupid? And I'm like, am I?
Was it a vegan burger?
No, I think even if it was a vegan burger, you could feed a dog everything that's in a vegan burger. Dogs can eat soy. I know that.
Right.
But like, I was like, oh, what? Why are you mad at me? And it turns out they were like, oh, you can't feed a dog a burger. You can't do that. You're a stupid guy. You're stupid. You're trying to feed a dog a burger. And I'm like, you know, I'm not going to argue with you, but in my head I was like, you can 100% feed a dog a burger. Like, what is going on here? Apparently this guy thought that you couldn't do that, but dogs will eat literally anything you give to them. You just can't give them chocolate or grapes or raisins or things that are literally poisonous to them.
Yes. I had a cat sit on my lap the other day. Now, I will not take responsibility for this because I was told to do it by the owner and I would not have done this of my own accord, but it was very cute. And I had the owner of this cat was like, hold this little piece of cheese and this cat will sit on your lap and just lick the cheese for like an hour. And it literally happened. The cat sat on my lap and just perfectly happy, purring away, and then occasionally just like a little lick of the cheese and then back to chilling.
Cats can't.
Lick of the cheese. And apparently cats, I don't know if cats can have cheese. Can they not have cheese?
Well, they're lactose intolerant generally. Most,
what?
Most mammals should be lactose intolerant.
Oh dear.
Is what I mean.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was told to do this by the owner of that cat. So
that's wild.
Uh-oh.
I mean, it's probably, it could be fine. I mean, you know.
It was a very happy cat.
When I say most mammals are lactose intolerant, what I mean is that we stop producing the enzyme necessary to break down lactose. Lactase, I'm pretty sure. We stop producing that kind of when we stop drinking milk, you know, and generally most mammals will only drink milk when they babies because they drink it from their mummy. And yeah, we tend to stop producing that after a sort of certain age. Although humans, because we've been drinking milk so often, we tend to continue producing it. Maybe this cat also.
Yeah, I mean, they feed it cheese. It loves cheese. Yeah. So maybe it's just had cheese its whole life and it still has the thing.
Maybe it's like people that have got, you know, like IBS or that are lactose intolerant and just eat cheese and drink milk anyway because they like it.
Yeah. Well, cat's stupid, so who knows?
Yeah. So dogs are actually really interesting because, as I said, they're facultative carnivores, which means that they can eat plant matter. And, you know, you're right in saying to some extent that some facultative carnivores are going to primarily eat meat and then only eat sort of, I say primarily eat meat, primarily eat animals, and then kind of shift to a more omnivorous diet if necessary. Whereas dogs are kind of weird because they are domesticated at this point, right? Which means they generally eat whatever we give them. And if you look at dog food, you know, nice, like sort of expensive dog foods will often have like carrots and stuff in them.
Yes. Yeah. You get like proper vegetable based, like vegetable and meat, like a Sunday roast type dog food. Yeah.
They look really good.
Yeah. My cat's interesting. I don't know if this is correct or not, but my cat's cat food has rice in it. Like just little bits of like individual grains of rice. And I don't know why.
Probably a fiber thing,
yeah,
or bulking it out maybe. Yeah. I don't know, because this is the thing. Carnivores tend to get a lot of their energy from protein, which makes sense because animals are just chock-a-block full of protein, right? All that muscle and whatnot. Plants still have protein, but, you know, generally in lower qualities. Yes, hench.
Qualities or quantities?
Quantities, sorry. Yeah. Quality over
crap
quantity.
Proteins.
Well, actually, quality as well. We'll get to that in a sec.
Oh.
So why don't we get to it now? Why don't we talk about bioavailability? Do you know what bioavailability is?
Yes, there's a difference between a food you eat having something in it and that thing then being available and absorbed and used by your body. Sometimes you could just poop it out and it wasn't, either wasn't bioavailable or your body's lazy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, bioavailability essentially is, it's a phrase that kind of refers to how much of a nutrient is actually used by your body, you know, is actually sort of absorbed or utilized by the body after it's been consumed. And it can be affected by a number of different things. So the structure of the food itself can, like, you know, obviously affect that. So we've spoken about plants being more difficult to digest. So that, you know, can affect the bioavailability because plants are generally harder to digest, for humans at least, than meat. If you're getting your nutrients from plants, it's generally in a less bioavailable form in that sense. Your health or, you know, sort of stage in your life that you're at can affect that. As we get older, we sort of have we have a harder time getting nutrients from our food. So essentially absorbing micronutrients, our ability to do that reduces as we age. The actual form of the food itself, like the sort of chemical form that it's in, because, you know, the stuff that we get from our food can come in kind of different forms. So iron, for example, right? Iron is something that we need in our diet. Now you might think, oh yeah, iron, we just have that as little iron atoms and we can get that into our body. If you lick a nail, maybe you'll get enough iron. Sure, but it's much easier to sort of, I guess, digest iron and get it into your body when it's in the heme form, essentially the form that it is in your blood, right? It is much easier to digest iron that is in that form than in sort of in any other form. Apparently, the bioavailability of heme iron is 15 to 35%, whilst the bioavailability of non-heme iron is 2 to 20%.
So this would be why if you ever get a packet of vitamin D, if you are prescribed vitamin D or you just fancy some vitamin D, then it will say something. It might say, for example, NRV, which is like the recommended amount that you're meant to have every day, 1,000%. Mm-hmm. And it's because actually when you take the vitamin D, it does contain 1,000% of your intended or recommended daily amount of vitamin D, but the majority of it you don't actually absorb.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know quite the mechanism as to why that is, but that's an example where you'd see it in everyday life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the last one, it would be the interactions with other foods. So obviously your body is a very complex biochemical system. So there are so many chemical reactions going on all the time. And obviously the foods that you eat can interact with each other in certain ways. So some foods can make other foods less bioavailable or more bioavailable. I think having citrus fruits with iron is good. That can make it more bioavailable.
There's something about calcium and magnesium, I think.
So the only thing I know about calcium is about minerals more generally, so zinc, calcium, iron, things like that. There are chemicals on the outside of plant cells that can bind to those minerals and just make them not absorb into your body. So obviously, you know, looking at this, when it comes to bioavailability, there are tons of factors that come into whether something can be digested or not. And, you know, this is generally here, what I'm talking about refers mostly to humans, but the same basic concept can be applied to pretty much any organism. You need to have, you know, the sort of nutrients in, you know, in the right form to be able to digest it, and some sort of different ways that you sort of can find these nutrients can be more or less effective at actually getting into your body. And that kind of, I guess, brings us on to cats and dogs and whether or not they can be vegan.
With a lot of preamble, but there was a lot to talk about before we got there.
Oh, absolutely. What do you think? Can cats and dogs be vegan or vegetarian?
So, I think there's a couple of conversations to have here. Firstly, I'm fairly sure that dogs can be comfortably vegan with the correct food purchases. Like, I'm pretty sure it's fine. It's not, I don't know if it's perfect, but I think it's fine. When it comes to cats, as far as I've read, I think technically it's possible. They're not going to die, but they're also probably not going to thrive.
Yeah.
The second conversation, I guess, to have is that obviously we're talking here about, and this is a question more than a statement, we're talking here about like obligate carnivores and herbivores and omnivores, and that's a sort of biological, a biology, it's talking about them in nature, isn't it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it's not outside the realms of possibility that we could understand at some point what it is that, like, we're talking about natural sources of food, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not outside the realm of possibility that we could one day understand what it is and why it is that an animal needs to eat meat rather than eating, say, vegetables, like naturally occurring meat versus naturally occurring vegetables, and sort of design food that meets all of those needs without it actually needing to come from a meat source.
We do kind of understand that already.
Okay.
I mean, like, I have an entire list of different vitamins and minerals and other sort of nutrients here that cats need, that dogs don't need, and specifically why. Like, we've got a pretty decent understanding of why certain animals need certain things, right?
Yeah.
And that is key, absolutely key to building a safe diet for, you know, your pet.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say, though, is it's weird that this question always comes up and includes both cats and dogs, because cats and dogs biologically are very bloody different.
Yeah.
They're so different. I mean, literally, we just run through some of the things here, right? So, I mean, if we look at taurine, which is an amino acid that is not used for building proteins, but is used, it's like found in most of the tissues in the sort of body. And I'm literally just reading it here from this, I think it's PetMD. It's important for healthy functioning of the heart, retina, biofluid, and certain aspects of reproduction. You'll probably find it in your Huel there, Luke. Taurine, you will probably most know it as being in Red Bull and other energy drinks.
Bull sperm.
Anyway, cats need to eat taurine, like preformed, it says here, and you can't find that in plants, so cats need to get that from animals, from eating other animals. Whereas dogs can make their own taurine. There are like tons of other things going on here as well. So if we talk about protein in their diets, so cats, let's say, I'm just going to read this verbatim here. If fed a perfectly balanced and 100% digestible protein in a diet, the cat will use 20% of that protein for growth, metabolism, and 12% for maintenance. Essentially, cats need more protein in their diets than dogs do, because if dogs are fed a perfectly balanced and 100% digestible protein in a diet, they'll use 12% of that protein for growth metabolism and only 4% for maintenance, right? So they're using way less of that protein when you give it to them. So cats need more protein in their diets than dogs do, because cats utilize, like, they get more from the protein, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What I mean here is that cats need to use more protein, so they need more protein in their diets.
Yeah. And right. It's more problematic if they don't have it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's essentially just more essential for a cat to have a high protein content in his diet than a dog. And that was kind of coming back to what we were saying earlier about carnivores using carnivores getting a lot of their energy from protein, right? So an omnivore would be able to get energy from other sources. So we don't primarily get our energy from protein unless you're crazy like me and you eat a ton of protein so that you can go to the gym. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, a lot of protein.
I'm a big boy and I need to maintain muscle mass.
You eat more protein than is your minimum requirement of protein.
I eat near enough four times that.
Yes, that's what I mean by curry eats a lot of protein.
But yeah, no, interestingly though, the sort of general idea for muscle growth is I think 2 to 2.4 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a lot more than the minimum.
That's for muscle growth. And that minimum is super low.
0.8,
generally, they set it at about 50 grams, I think, is what you'll see on most of your food labels and whatnot. That is to essentially cover the protein that you're losing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I personally think that you should probably have a slightly higher concentration of protein in your diet than is recommended, particularly if you're vegan, because the protein that you're getting may not be in particularly bioavailable forms.
And it makes up for all the days when you forget and you don't get it as well.
Exactly. Yeah, sure. If you're Luke, then yeah, sure. But yeah, no, and also the difference between cats and dogs, you could look at fasting and starvation. So I'm going to read this again here. Cats do not mobilize fat reserves for energy very efficiently, and in fact break down non-fatty body tissues for energy. This upsets the internal chemical factory and can lead to a very dangerous feline disorder called hepatic lipidosis. Never put a fat cat on a starvation diet. It might just put the entire factory out of business. Essentially, cats don't deal with starvation nearly as well as dogs do, apparently, because they're not very good at taking fat and then, I guess, utilizing that for energy, if that makes sense.
It might put the entire factory out of business. Is that a way of saying your cat will die?
Yeah, yeah. I told you I was reading it verbatim.
A weird way of saying your cat will die.
Well, they're basically calling their metabolism an internal chemical factory there, which is a great way of describing it. And they're saying that, yeah, the entire factory out of business, the cat.
Cat's dead.
Exactly. Whereas dogs can apparently tolerate prolonged fasts and utilize fat reserves for energy. And I mean, yeah, look, cats and dogs are biologically quite different. So these are really two questions that we're tackling. And even those questions themselves are not, you know, just simple singular questions. So I did a bit of reading and I looked into this because personally, I kind of wanted the answer to be, no, it's not possible. Stop trying to put your cats and dogs on vegan diets. Because that would be the easiest way to stop people from putting their cats and dogs on vegan diets.
Yeah.
However, that's not the case. It is technically possible to put cats and dogs on vegan diets, or vegetarian /vegan diets. In fact, vegetarian diets for dogs apparently is pretty fine. You know, I mean, the main thing here is that you cannot do this yourself. And I'm being very, very serious about this. If you're listening, I'm looking right down the lens of the camera. I'm staring right into your soul and saying, you cannot do this by yourself. If for some godforsaken reason, you decide that your morals also need to be applied to an animal that is living in your home, you know, a pet or a buddy, however you want to define them. And you want to do that, right? Go to a professional, go to a vet, and you need to have your pet monitored, right? You cannot just switch your pet to a vegetarian or vegan diet in the same way that you probably shouldn't just switch to a vegetarian or vegan diet, because it's really bloody hard. And, to make the switch. I mean, once you're in it, should be fine. It's really bloody hard to make the switch and make sure that you are getting the right nutrients for yourself.
Yeah.
And you know how you're feeling.
Yeah.
And you can look at all the nutrients in your food and you've got a good education relatively on what you need.
When I went vegan, I was really bad at it. Yeah. I got very unhealthy. I'm fine now, but gosh, I got very unhealthy.
To be fair, it was harder back when you went vegan as well.
It was much harder when I was vegan. And I was like, I was 18. I was an idiot.
Yeah, no.
So yeah, and I wasn't taking it very seriously. And I was very unhealthy.
Well, that's what I say, that most people say, oh, and a vegan diet is really hard. No, it isn't. It's incredibly easy. What's hard is switching to a vegan diet. Because you've got, in your case, 18, in my case, like 20-odd years of, here's how to eat with meat. And you suddenly got to know, I guess, a lot more about your diet and about nutrition than you did before. And it's just, it's not necessarily a lot harder. It's just, you need to get over that sort of hump of information that you don't currently have.
Yeah.
And then it's pretty much easy.
Yeah. Yeah, you're very much not taught why, like, you're taught a little bit, but, like, you're basically, treated as, it's almost like you're in, like, a cult. Mm-hmm. You're in a cult where we're in a cult, and it's like, as long as you stick to the rules of the cult, you'll be fine. There are nutritionists who work in the government, and they figure out what people need to eat, and also what foodstuffs they want to promote, such as cheese, to subsidize the dairy industry.
Then what about grains, Luke?
And grains. Sorry, my bad. Grains and also cheese, because we still live in the World War II era of nutrition. And we have massive hangovers from those industries. As long as you follow the rules of the cult, then you'll be fine. But if you decide, oh, actually, some of the rules of this cult are less than perfect, and there's, the planet's dying, and also there's a bunch of sad animals lying around being sad, I'm going to sort of go outside the rules of this cult. Well, you weren't taught how to exist not in the cult, so now you will be unhealthy for a year, in my case.
Yeah.
But then I'm fine now.
It's no, great. Absolutely. And like it is literally just a transition period that I find that people will give up during. And I think that's the main thing, right? If you want to go vegan, don't do it all in one go, all in one jump. Get some vegan recipes, kind of look into it and see what you might need to keep an eye out for. Do you need to maybe have iron supplements on hand just in case you realize you're not getting enough iron? Do you maybe need to start having Marmite or B vitamin supplements to make sure you're getting your B vitamins? Like, it's not that hard. It's okay. The way I'm describing it makes it sound like it's something you've got to think about. I genuinely don't think about my nutrition at this point other than macronutrients. And that's only because I have a personal trainer telling me to do that. Like, I don't pay attention to my B vitamins or anything like that because I'm probably getting enough.
And I've now successfully transitioned my colony of Venus flytraps over to a fully vegan diet.
Vegan flytraps.
Vegan flytraps.
But back to cats and dogs being vegan or vegetarian. Yeah, look, you can technically do it with an expert's help. I mean, like, with an expert's help is the only way that this is remotely possible. But again, like, there haven't been a huge number of studies on this, and it's also very specific to your pet, and it's not necessarily going to confer a lot of benefits to your pet. The benefits are mostly going to be to you feeling like a really good person because you've made your dog vegan.
And you get something to talk about at parties.
Well, yeah, if you're not an interesting person, oh boy, is this maybe the thing for you.
My cat is not vegan. My cat is very much not vegan. And I'm a vegan.
You still talk all about your cat. Oh, blah, 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 blah. That's what he's like about this cat.
I get, like, well-sourced, Christ, I get so well-sourced cat food, but it's not vegan, and I'm not going to do it.
No,
I
why? It, why would
well,
you?
Because it's silly.
No, no, I agree with you.
Like, well, I just think it's cruel. Unless you're going to, like... Are you going to spend an hour a day doing your cat's nutrition?
No.
Like, no, you're not.
Are you, like, this is, so, and it's not just that. You need to be, as I said, you need to be testing your cat as well.
Yeah.
You need to be making sure that not only are you giving them the adequate balance of nutrients, that they're actually absorbing it. And there are some reasons that you might move a dog to a vegetarian diet if it's got, say, specific allergies and whatnot that make it difficult to feed it meat. Then vegetarian diet, it is possible. But then... Again, like, it's just not necessary. It's such a difficult thing to do correctly and not harm the health of your cat or dog, that I don't understand why people do it. Like, I understand having an aversion to the meat industry.
Just get a rabbit.
Get a rabbit. I mean, look, I had rats. I would cook and feed them chicken. I don't care. But that's because they're rats. Like, I should give them what they eat.
Chickens.
You know what I mean?
Do rats eat chickens
rats
in the wild?
Rats will eat literally anything.
I always find it really surprising when I give my cat, because I try to get it like chicken and fish, things that I would see as generally slightly less dreadful for the environment than maybe like beef or lamb and stuff. But when they once sent me some lamb accidentally, I was like, when's my cat going to eat a lamb?
That's what I was thinking,
like,
right?
When do the cats eat? But they make lamb cat food, probably because there's leftover lamb somewhere lying around. Or maybe it's not eaten. It's like lamb butt and hoof or something. probably. But yeah, like, when do cats eat lambs? I can't imagine a cat taking down a lamb.
No, no. I couldn't imagine that.
Maybe like one of those big cats.
Maybe like a big wild cat.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, well, I mean, I suppose they probably could take down a lamb, but like, why would they? You know what I mean?
Yeah, there are
chickens
around.
Are about and all that. Yeah, I reckon ultimately you could technically feed your cats a vegetarian diet. Vegan diets are incredibly problematic for cats. And that comes down to the bioavailability thing that we were talking about earlier. Cats just aren't set up to get, you know, their nutrients and energy and protein and whatnot from those sources, and there are specific things that they need that aren't produced in plants, so they then need to be supplemented into the food. And also, is that going to be absorbed well and all of that sort of stuff? Like, it there's so much to think about there, and it's a risk, maybe not a huge risk, but it is a risk to the health of your pet. Why would you do it? If you're doing this out of a sort of care for animals, why are you putting your care for animals above the actual well-being of an animal that's in your care? Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't seem to add up for me. Just because it's technically possible doesn't mean that you should go ahead and do it just to make yourself feel good. I feel that kind of brings us on to the sort of ethics of vegan pets?
Yeah.
What are you thinking?
Well, my thought on it with my cat is that my cat exists already. I didn't buy a cat that was bred deliberately. It was a wild cat that was living in a friend's garden and needed a home. And so I'm going to meet her needs mm-hmm. as an animal that already exists.
Mm.
And that is what I'm going to do. If I were not doing it, somebody else would be meeting the needs of that cat, hopefully, or she'd be wild. In which case she'd be eating like rats and birds and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also not great. Like, bird populations are falling. And that's not good. So, you know, whatever. I'm going to meet the needs of the cat that exists already that I didn't choose to exist.
Absolutely. This is what I think is the main issue here. You've got vegans that are inherently kind of selfish. Their veganism is based not necessarily around... I mean, okay, put it this way. It can be based around the well-being of animals, but in this instance, their own sort of personal feelings are coming to the forefront. Because it's not just about protecting animals if you're not going to look out for the well-being of this particular animal.
Yeah, I'm vegan because I don't need to eat meat. Because if something needs to eat meat, then like as we say, if somebody has some health condition where they need to eat meat, then that's your health condition and you need to eat meat.
Yeah, that's fine.
Like, that, whatever, that's fine. My cat, arguably, unless there was something like Huel for cats, which is like, I have Huel, which is like nutritionally full, not sponsored, nutritionally full, full meal in a drink. Like, if there was Huel for cats, that's what I talk about. Like, we could technically reverse engineer the things that cats need, and we could make something that cats eat from plant sources, technically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ethically, I think that's actually a wonderful thing to do. Like,
sure,
if we could figure out how to do it and the cats were happy and healthy and we could prove the cats were happy and healthy and didn't need to be constantly tested and checked for the... all that, I don't need to go and get blood tests when I drink Huel. And so if I could do that for my cat, then, you know, I'd maybe consider it. But if I'm entering into a world, like into a life where I have to sort of have my cat's blood taken every few months to check she's okay, and I have to do a bunch of work paying attention to her nutrition and all that kind of stuff, when actually I could just get some ethically sourced meat, cat food, and accept the reality of the fact that this animal already exists and doesn't deserve to die, then then I'm going to do that.
Yeah, I feel like if you're at the level of veganism where you are, I mean, you're going to overlook the fact that, I mean, your pet can't consent, you know? Your pet is an animal that cannot choose to not eat. It basically eats whatever you give it, right? And so you need to look out for it and make decisions in its best interest rather than your own.
It's a baby.
Yeah. And the way I kind of would look at this is that if it's gotten to the point, you know, where you care so much about veganism that you are willing to try to not make your, to sort of make your pets vegan with you, then should you even really have pets? Like, if you care so much for the well-being of animals and all of that, I feel like owning pets would kind of conflict with that sort of viewpoint that you hold, right?
Well, I think it's a different case for dogs. And, you know, if somebody's willing to do all the work to make a cat vegan and it be healthy and they're checking that and they're taking on the responsibility of checking that, then... You know, they're checking, and that's that, yeah. You know, whatever. Like, I'm not going to criticize that if you want to do all that work. And it is good, and you are checking, and a vet agrees that you are checking correctly, and great, in which case, fine. Like I said, I've heard that dogs are okay.
They're generally fine.
And there is, like, specifically formulated dog food that will do it. And I think that my friends who have the dog, I'm pretty sure they get it checked up anyway, just in case. Then that sounds fine. I don't think ethically there's necessarily anything wrong with doing this if you're going to get the opinion of a professional that the cat is thriving and is absolutely fine, and you're going to continue to do that, and you're going to do all that work, and you're going to pay for it, and you're going to take all that responsibility on yourself, then fine. And what we're talking about the statement, can a cat be vegan, the answer to that question is technically yes. As far as I understood it, like, technically it is possible, but in practice, can a normal pet owner doing the normal amount of work that a pet owner does for that pet raise a cat to be vegan without other precautions? The answer is pretty much no. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, look, I mean, from what I've read, yeah, you're pretty spot on, man. Like, it's technically possible in that we can conceivably do it without serious adverse sort of risk or harm to the animal involved. I just personally think that, ethically speaking, why? You know what I mean? I mean, why are you doing this? If it is because you are vegan and you want to limit harm, do not have a pet. You're not owed a pet. You don't have a right to having a pet. And when I say you don't have a right to having a pet, I don't mean you don't have a right to having a specific animal or species as a pet. If you want a vegan pet and you believe so wholeheartedly in your veganism, get an animal that is already a vegan.
Rabbits eat straw. It's really cool when you watch them do it, because they're turning straw into rabbit. Like, yeah. That's magic.
It's insane.
It's really cool.
It's like plants turn sun into plant, sun and air into plant.
Sun and air into plant.
And
tiny bit of mud.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So little mud.
I turn Huel and beans on toast into Luke.
I'm sure you do. But I need to make sure that people know this, because it's insane.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's kind of obvious, right, when you look into it or you kind of think about it. But it's insane. Plants are mostly formed from air. Air and sunlight. They do not, like, their roots going into the ground, they're not getting a lot of stuff from that. They're getting minerals and other little nutrients, but the carbon in the air, the carbon dioxide in the air, is what makes up the carbohydrate in plants. That's literally just they're taking air and making it into solids.
Like,
that's them. It's insane.
I don't
insane.
Like it.
No,
it's scary, and I don't understand the world.
But you do understand now, Luke, the ethics and science of vegan pets.
I do indeed.
Now, I think it might be time for a quick fire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. Vegan cat edition.
So the rules for the quickfire quiz are the same as always. Look, I will ask one question. That's just one question for you. The first person to get the question right, that's you or the audience, wins. What do they win, Luke?
They win a vegan cat and 1 year's supply of vegan cat food, paid for and formulated by Corey himself.
Luke, you need to win this because you keep on promising things that I can't deliver.
I'm so excited for my vegan cat and cat food.
Well, the question for you is, Luke, What does herbivore mean in Latin?
It means plant eater.
Ding, ding, ding. You are correct.
Did I beat you? I think I did, because you're too slow.
And that is it from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to exec producers Denito and Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for every episode due every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys or finding God at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod. Wait, how do you do this?
@gmail.com. You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, Corey, I just realized why Vore is called Vore. Oh, I didn't need to think about that today.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.